Hello and welcome back to the channel, and thank you for joining me in another of my interviews. Today, by popular demand, ladies and gentlemen, I bring back Sir, it sounds like I'm bringing back from somewhere, I don't know where, Sir Julian Rose. It's wonderful to have you, Julian. Here he is, organic farmer, for those who don't know, and founder of the Hardwick Estate for Real Ecology. And today, we're going to look at, well, nothing less than real food, real life, none of those GMOs, and nor robots. We don't want any of that. It's getting back to a real sense of purpose and living and taking back control of our lives in many ways.
Exactly.
Hello, Julian. How are you?
I'm very well, Richard, and I'm delighted to be back again.
Well, it is lovely. It's lovely to have you back.
Thank you. And I very much enjoyed the last time, and I very much appreciated the wisdom and common sense of your audience, which is quite rare. So I feel very honoured to be back again.
Well, it's not. I don't know what it is about the audience, why they have found their way to me particularly, but it's fascinating reading the comments and seeing just how much they know, how educated they are, and how delightful and how earthy in many ways, and you know, which is great.
Yes, that's right.
And that really helps to spread the message to other people, because you know, part of the job, I think, is almost sending those people who understand to talk to those people who perhaps have not seen the videos and can introduce these sort of subjects to their friends. So they're doing fantastic work.
The word of mouth is the old way and the best.
Yes, totally agree.
Yeah.
So I know that in the past we were talking about organic farming. We were talking about the how food is very important, non-mucked about with food. This is what you've been doing for a long time, and the whole business of building local and communities.
Yes, that's absolutely right. Actually, what I'm going to talk about today is put this whole issue into a setting which has become critical, because we have very little time to get our act together in the face of the threats being pushed on us by the World Economic Forum, the World Health Organization, the United Nations, the European Union, and every mega institute on the planet is following the same agenda. Mm. That agenda is extremely negative. And the only way we can counteract it is by taking control of our destinies. Now, a man who did take control of his destiny and made a major impact on the British Isles back in 1381 was a gentleman called Wat Tyler. And he led something called the Peasants' Revolt. And what he said, a very famous quote, is this: England should be a nation of self-governing communities. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this is my recommendation for this moment in history. Around 700 years later, we've been waiting a long time for this to happen. And unfortunately, waiting is perhaps the problematical word. It's mostly our passivity which has allowed us to keep taking the message from the top instead of taking control from the bottom. And now, I think we have to take very, very seriously this very powerful statement of Wat Tyler when he was leading the Peasants' Revolt, which incidentally, for people that don't remember their history or perhaps never studied that particular period of time, he did very nearly oust the regime of that era. He only by an act of treachery, while he was negotiating with King John for a better deal for the peasants, he was murdered. Right there with a huge crowd of people in the centre of London.
In Smithfield, wasn't it? In Smithfield.
Yes, in Smithfield. Exactly. Yep. And he had raised a real army of peasants. You know, they were equipped with pitchforks and anything you could hit anyone over the head with and anything they could find in their farmyard, which could be used as a weapon. And they did rise up because they were being forced into a situation which was totally impossible from the point of view of survival by the barons and by the people who basically were put in charge of taxation, put in charge of managing people. You could even say they were the technocrats of that era. And this was particularly the people the peasants rose up against. But of course, it always came from the top. And so they had to go for London and go for the king and try and make him aware that the vital importance of the peasantry to the land in England. Now, the peasantry had a rough deal, actually, because they were forced off the land over subsequent centuries by the Enclosures Acts, which basically gradually changed Great Britain into a country of farms surrounded by fences and hedges, whereas it had been much more open-ended before. And most of the food had been grown based on village life and small-town life and something called the strip farm system, where the land that you farmed came out from the village in strips. And you simply went out there, grew your food, milked your cows there, brought your produce back to your house, and your neighbors cooperated with you because it was in everybody's interest to cooperate. And that farming system is perhaps not perfect from the point of view of its management of the soil and the lack of formal rotations, which came in later. But from the perspective of maintaining the livelihood of local populations, it was second to none. And it still is practiced in certain parts of the world.
I think there's a village, I forget what it's called now, but I think there's a village up north who still have that principle, and you can go and have a look at it. And of course, yes, the countryside, if you look at those 1960s black and white pictures, you can see in the landscape.
That's right.
At that time, the scars of that, I say scars, but
that's right.
I mean, that's effectively what it is. But that wonderful type of farming, it is so fascinating to see.
Isn't it?
It went on for centuries.
It went on for centuries.
Yes.
So basically, what I'm trying to get across now, I think, is that we need to return very fast, within the next 5-10 years, to a self-governing community approach in the country. And that has to be created by us. Essentially, we have to turn away from centralized power via parliament. We have to turn away from centralized power based on corporations. We have to turn away from our phony democracy altogether. It's failed us, 100%. And we have to start our own game on our own terms, on our own pitch. Now, if leadership is needed, and it usually is, it must be by the wise, a council of the wise. Only, in my view, communities can spot the wise and see who is the responsible one in their midst. You can't do this via TV sets and national stages. You know, you can only tell within a community when you're close up the difference between ego and sincerity.
Yes, definitely.
So this is the new democracy. This is what's coming. This is the new society. The fact that it happens to hark back 700 years only goes to show how slow the evolutionary process has been, especially from the bottom-up perspective. Now, the way of doing things which we're currently living with and have been living with for quite a while now is basically a form of theatre. You know, there's nothing real happening up there. It's a very low level of theatre. And I think almost all of us have worked out now that this, based on lying, actually, you know, the art of lying is essential if you're going to be a politician these days. And the one that doesn't is alone, standing there in the Houses of Parliament, and all the rest leave the room because he's about to speak the truth.
As we have so,
yes,
so
exactly.
Yes, as we've seen.
Yes. So we must now take this very seriously and say, right, we're going to take control of our destinies. Now, the number one imperative to taking control of one's destiny comes from the procurement of life's essentials. That is the number one necessity, and basically, food is the first on the list. So we need, I think, to say to ourselves, now is the time to put that at the top of the list of what's the most important thing to do in our lives, how to procure a diet which is real, and which is not fake, which is not synthetic, and how to work with other people in a cooperative spirit to ensure that we can have access to land, to the enough, at least, or assets to be able to create small-scale units, small holdings, cooperatives, whatever, you name it. Now, Klaus Schwab and King Charles don't want us, they want us, excuse me, to eat synthetic foods and insects. But we don't.
No way.
Precisely.
I mean, you know, even the idea of it is repulsive.
Utterly repulsive. So, but you have to wake up to the fact that the opportunities we have for avoiding this may be limited. Because quite recently, an act was passed by the House of Parliament, which was received royal assent from Prince Charles. Actually, he was Prince Charles when he gave it royal assent. No, he wasn't. I think he was already king. Excuse me, I'm wrong about that. It was March the 23rd, so he was already king. And it's called the Genetic Technology Precision Breeding Act 2023. And it was given the royal go-ahead by King Charles III, giving it his royal assent. Now, King Charles, when he was Prince Charles, had a reputation for being a strong supporter of environmental causes and indeed organic farming and indeed proper food and a good way of life. So the fact that he gave his royal assent to a bill which is going to create a genetic technology precision breeding program, which is essentially GMO taken one step further, something called CRISP. It's gene editing, actually. And the plan is to be able to gene edit plants and animals to be able to carry almost any form of extra element that someone like Klaus Schwab might consider appropriate. Now, I'll give you a shocking example. mRNA vaccines are likely to be included in these new novel foods. So you would be eating a food which contained a vaccine. And here comes the second shocker. There is going to be no labeling. It has been considered that this is no different from ordinary food. There is no need to create special labeling for it.
Good.
And that is what has been passed into law on the 23rd of March.
I mean, it's beyond belief that a man who holds such responsibility as he does for his people in this country and all the rest of the Commonwealth could conceivably consider, I mean, unless he lost his mind over the period that he was studying this act, it just beggars belief.
Yes, it does beggar belief. And the point about it, I think, is this. We see what happens when people wish to retain power. The club, actually, it's even called the firm within royal circles, which royalty represents, is a hugely wealthy organization. It's a form of corporation, actually. It's not just a nice family with a lot of money, following some old rituals from the past, which we all find rather enjoyable. It's actually a corporation with an agenda. And unfortunately, while the agenda might have been something pro-human a while back, and I think you have to go quite a long way back, actually, certainly beyond the Queen, further back than her, was already out of control once she was in power. The agenda is the same agenda as the globalist agenda now. And I think the reason why it's happened this way is because the need, or at least the belief of people in power within royalty, is that they must hold on to their empire at all costs. And in order to do that, you really have to be, so to speak, working shoulder to shoulder with the biggest organizations on the planet, which are the ones associated with globalization and are made up of all the leading corporations of the planet and all the major banking organizations of the planet. Now, if you do that, you're then in the territory. Excuse me, I think I'm
going all right. Yeah, no, time just moving it across.
Yes, you're going into territory which is essentially the New World Order. And you can't compromise under this situation. Although what the king has tried to do was to have one foot in each camp. Mm. He tried to say, well, I very much appreciate and want to support organic farming and environmental issues. And he wants the image that the public receive to be that image. But the other image, which has got out willy-nilly, because he opened the recent Davos Forum for the WEF only a year ago with a speech announcing that we have to follow the edicts of the Green New Deal, of the Great Reset, of the Fourth Industrial Revolution. He actually was there. He was the first person to really announce this. So he's compromised 100%. It's a position of complete hypocrisy. I'm personally not going to bring in what I feel about the individual. I'm saying this. One cannot represent one's people and take a coronation oath, which he will be in 3 weeks' time, saying that he will protect the integrity of the people and the sovereignty of his nation, while at the same time standing shoulder to shoulder with Klaus Schwab and an organization which is interested in dismantling the nation state completely. Mm. And not only dismantling the nation state, of altering everything which we take as a positive tradition. And since we're discussing food, you can take that as a very central issue indeed, because actually the plan under the Green New Deal is to indeed make most food synthetic. So it will be Petri dish products, which are grown in laboratories, which will become factories. And they will range through almost every product, particularly meat and dairy products. And then vegetables will be grown in huge hydroponic factories where they drip water with chemicals in it into large vats, and all the plants grow out of that. There's no soil involved at all. Now, this is all spelt out. If anyone wants to research it, it's all in the public domain, this information. You can find it if you look on the WEF website, for example, or in Klaus Schwab's book. It's all spelled out. Mm. So we have no reason to be surprised. You know, we ought to know this by now. So food is going to be taken over under these conditions, because the theory is if you're going to save the planet from global warming, you must cease having any livestock on the land. You must, they fart and they burp. And those two things are extremely bad news, apparently, and are going to cause the entire world to get hot very quickly, and we're all going to get fried. So cows are going to have to wear masks if they exist. And actually, yes, this is really true. And King Charles awarded a special prize to a young man who invented one at a recent technology
forum. Oh, my goodness.
And there was pictures of it, actually, even in the Daily Mail. Cow wearing a mask, very much like COVID one, but rather more elaborate, to prevent methane coming out of its mouth and going into the upper atmosphere and causing global warming. Now, you can only be deeply cynical when you hear this stuff. This is a sort of, you can hear people laughing in the background, that people would agree to go along with anything like this. You can hear them laughing, you know, because it's absurd that anyone would agree to such nonsense as this. Aside from the fact, and we won't get into this because it's too big a subject, the global warming issue itself is a scam. And it was invented already at the Club of Rome in 1972 as a way of controlling people, of keeping them frightened and making them feel that something terrible is going to happen to the planet. And it was devised by the very same people who are leading the show now, by the corporatists. the people who have the power and want to retain the power, and not only contain but increase their power base. And the warming of the upper atmosphere is a tiny event by comparison to all the other things that are going on that really matter on this planet, but are far more devastating than this minuscule level of warming, which has incidentally stopped since 2016. There is no, it's admitted now even in top scientific circle, there is no acceleration of warming process. In fact, there's a cooling tendency. And some people believe, some scientists believe, and there's credibility in this, that we're actually possibly moving towards something more like an ice age, a second mini ice age. And that would partly be because the way the world works, the world is a living being. She's called Gaia in some circles. She's a living being, just like you and I are living beings, and all of nature is a living being. And she tries to adapt herself to counteract changes. So say there was a warming change, well, she'll try and counteract a little bit to bring in something cool. Yes. So, you know, she has a fever, our planet. Has a fever, and it's not surprising because she's had every sort of toxin thrown at her, and she has a fever. So what I was going to try and bring into the conversation was this, because most people always come up with a very real question. How are we going to do this job of procuring our food? Let's stick with food. And I've got a thought about this. I've written about it in one of my books, and I've written quite a few essays about it too in the past. And it has never gone away. In fact, it's coming back even stronger. What I think we're going to have to do is contract farmers to grow our food for us. Now, when I say farmers, I'm talking about small and medium-sized farmers still working in the traditional family farming way. And believe me, they're disappearing very fast. But they exist. They're good people. They're struggling to make a living. They can't make a living by selling their product onto the world market.
Mm.
They can't make a living by selling to supermarkets. Actually, supermarkets won't even buy from them because they're not big enough and they can't follow the quality control crap. So we're the only people, the consumers have to take this initiative. We're the only people that can save these sort of farmers. What I think we should try and achieve is something which was done in Tokyo, I think. I read about it already 20 years ago, and it struck me very strongly. At that point in time in Japan, there was a big urban renewal project, and many small farmers, and there were many small farmers at that time, were forced off the land into high-rise apartment blocks in the edge of Tokyo, in the suburban area. And they were farmers. So what they did was they clubbed together, and they said, we're going to help our fellow farmers who are still surviving on the land by contracting them to grow our food for us and paying them an agreed fee on a monthly or weekly basis and to give them a guarantee of security.
Yes.
We won't shop in supermarkets. We won't shop in places where food is being imported and exported and on a large scale and wrapped in cling film and made to look nice and all the rest of it. We'll buy direct from the real people on the ground. I think this is a model that we could adapt in the UK by doing something along the following lines. Say you're living in a small town or village. You do reconnaissance and research. Who are the local farmers in your area? How much farmland is there that still potentially could grow vegetables, let's say, and some chickens or some whatever it might be? And then you find out who the farmers are, you invite them to have a cup of tea. It's a sort of round table gathering in your home. Now, someone would have to take the initiative, quite obviously. Yes. And you would say, okay, bring some other consumers. I've talked to Miss such and such person, Mrs. X and Mr. Y. And yeah, they're also very worried about where they're going to get the decent meal, decent food from in the future. So you invite them, come over, have a cup of coffee. And we're inviting two or three farmers over to have a discussion. We want real food, and we want it fresh. We want it local, and we want to pay a fair price for it, you know. And you bring the farmer in, and you say to them, we want fresh food. We want it real food and properly grown, and we'll pay a real price for it. Are you interested? in growing. So, you might grow us a ton of carrots, you might grow us some potatoes, you might grow some free-range hens or produce so many eggs, and we will guarantee you, as your closest neighbors and supporters, incidentally, we will guarantee you, pay you a proper price, and there'll be no middleman involved. So you should get better than you will get trying to sell into the national marketplace.
Mm.
And this, if it happened in communities all over the country, we could start finally to break down this gap between the urban or suburban and the farming community. Because it's this gap which is holding up all these initiatives. There's quite a lot of people trying to make various forms of initiative, but most people are frightened of speaking to farmers. It's a weird thing. I don't know why it is. They don't dare. They don't think they speak the same language. They there's all sorts of excuses people make for why they can't really talk with farmers. And farmers also have a certain skepticism, and it's not surprising, really, about the folks that are coming out of the cities. And they're, oh, yeah, those are the townies. Mm. The townies. And it's two worlds. Okay, it is two worlds. Let's admit it. But it's high time that those two worlds once again interlock.
Mm.
And that's where we go right back to Wat Tyler and the notion of self-governing communities, a new society built from a bottom-up relationship based on consumers and farmers agreeing to work together to create a biodiverse, rich source of food in the face of a absolutely diabolical disaster, which is very, very close. And this is why I'm making such an emphasis on it now, because we have very little time. Deadly serious stuff, what I'm saying right this moment.
Mm.
So that's the bare bones only of a suggestion, which I hope people can debate and talk about and maybe leave comments on, and even ideas about how they might be keen to try out and offer this possibility to local farmers. Get people together, start talking to them. What are the deals going to be? This is what we need now.
Well, I absolutely think it's a stonking idea. It's really brilliant. I mean, I've been sort of along those lines myself, trying to think how would you do it, even sort of with the old milk float type thing, where you,
yes,
instead of milk, you've got farm produce coming from the local farm. So people, if anyone's, yes, seen Clarkson's farm, for example, they know if loads of people descend on his shop, it's nowhere to put people and they're parking all over the place. But if the food is coming back into the community, but rather, yes, than going into a supermarket and disappearing and being put in cold storage and all the rest of it,
yeah,
there's a fantastic scene. For those of you who love Jacques Tati, there's a lovely scene in, is it Mon Oncle, in which...
Oh, I love it. I love that film.
Absolutely brilliant. And you go in there, you see the market and all the stuff is on there, and you just see these old farm carts. I mean, it's 1950s, 60s, that sort of period.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Yeah. But all those beautiful farms, and there the people are coming out, and you just feel that sense of community again as people,
yes,
are
exactly,
looking at their cabbages and their carrots and they're talking.
Exactly.
And there's no face recognition. There's no modern thing. You're exchanging in cash and all those things that make life just really wonderful. But the other, yes, thing is what you're saying with the local thing about farms is you can go and look at the farms,
exactly,
and look at the food, which also then makes the farmer want to be not saying,
yes,
he's not responsible, but they want to make sure that everything is looking good and that food,
exactly,
is wholesome.
Yes.
Rather
the
than
pride. Yeah.
Yes. And they're, because I've been reading these old books on farming from the sort of 1930s, and they talk about the absolute getting the ploughing line so,
yes,
absolutely,
yes,
perfect.
Yes.
And if they don't, they're ridiculed down the pub,
yes,
by the farm down the road. And all of that, they didn't have very much, and it was sort of subsistence farming, but they worked really hard. And you get from those stories something that is so lost.
Exactly.
That sense of community, being outside, enjoying the life, not wanting for every damn trinket, but wanting good quality food, so they're making their own cider and they're sharing stuff and,
exactly,
a bit of bacon from here and all of that.
Yes.
And it's not too late. I agree with you.
It's not too late, but, there's a sort of, You know, the moment of great crisis, very often some of the most creative things happen. We've seen this over and over again in the world historically. And when people have their backs really up against the wall, and I'm trying to push people's backs against the wall now, I'm saying, you've got to move in the next 2 years. Got to. Well, I don't mean necessarily move, depending on where you are already. In some cases, you will have to actually move. Other cases, you can make it happen where you are just by getting together with other people and saying, okay, now we're going to do it now. We're not going to just talk about it.
No, absolutely. And the fear of things like the mRNA vaccine put into food where you have no consent, you don't even know it's there. I mean, that's the most abhorrent thing. And we've seen, as Andrew Bridgen has stood up, trying to let people know about the harms that have come from the experimental medical procedure that we've had put upon us and encouraged to take. But you want the choice. You know, if you want to have it, fair enough. But if you don't want to have it, and you, what would be the point of putting it into food when food naturally grown is there for our benefit anyway?
Food is a medicine. In fact, it's well known in certain cultures of the world that food is actually considered medicine. And when there's a rich biodiversity of products and a very wide variety of products being grown on farms, the knowledgeable people would be able to go straight to something in our back garden or in your field and pull it out and say, this is what you need to cure you of that cough or that cold or whatever it is. You know, food actually is a medicine, as well. We're down to, I think it's just between 12 and 15 lines of vegetables only now. I'm talking about supermarkets.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
Because supermarkets have been the killers of all this.
Yes.
Anyone who's still shopping in a supermarket really must stop now, because you're just supporting the global initiative, which is destroying everything we believe in.
Yes.
So basically, you know, people only think, well, there's 12 different types of vegetables. One, and that's it, isn't it? You know.
Yeah.
Whereas only about 50 or 60 years ago, there were 200.
I mean, just in apples.
200 years ago, there were 400.
Exactly. Just in apples alone. You know, especially if you go to sort of Somerset or down the West Country, you know, they're renowned for all their different types of ciders from different types of apples and all the different wonderful orchards. I mean, it is amazing. Somebody sent me a link, actually, to a product that has been now is on fruit, particularly oranges, cucumbers. I won't mention the product name, but it's a substance which is supposed to try and make the product, it's I suppose like a wax that's put over it, to make it wrapped up and have a longer shelf life.
Right.
Which, you know, the idea of having something that's 3 or 4 weeks beyond what it already can do is just a bit, is an anathema to me, because you know you get stuff out the ground and you eat it as quickly as possible. It's just delicious, and
so delicious.
Yes, and the flavors, you know, if you're letting it, it's
and the energy and the energy.
Yeah, it's not like cheese in which it's maturing.
It's a different thing.
So supermarkets are putting this on, and you know, you've got to eat that as well. And they say, "Oh, that's harmless," and yet there's some hazards associated with this product. And you're absolutely right. I was out this morning, and on a Thursday we go to the farm shop near us. It's about 7 miles away, so it's a bit of a trip. Yeah. So we go up there and we go in and we look at the meat and we get proper meat, and then we buy some veg. And I have a veg box now that comes from an organic farm, because I just won't touch the supermarket stuff. I know it's more expensive, but I've put food at the top. You know, I don't smoke. I don't drink. I don't do very much. Spend my time on here.
But
good quality, wholesome food tastes so nice. And it's so good.
Yes.
And you don't just need to gorge on it either.
No, that's completely right. It's a social issue too, food, of course. You know, one wants to share it.
Yes.
One doesn't like eating meals alone, especially when they're very good.
Mm.
I mean, if someone made me eat Kentucky Fried Chicken, if I could survive it, I'd probably want to eat it alone, because I'd be embarrassed to have anyone watching.
Absolutely.
The real food issue.
Yes.
Is a social issue, and that's all part of it. That's all part of what we're discussing. It's coming back again into this. You described it very nicely yourself. And I just have to say one more thing about the supermarket. You know, we did research when I was involved with the Soil Association. I was on the board of the Soil Association, which sets standards for organic farming and promotes organic farming, basically. Has been doing so since 1946. And we did research back then, it's already 30 years ago now, which looked into the distance traveled by a typical supermarket trolley of food. And back then, it was 7,500 miles.
Wow.
And now, it's more like 12,500. And organic foods even more. Now, there's a shock for you.
Yes.
Now, you see, that's the whole irony of it all. Organic food is now more than conventional food. They're all off the peg when it comes to distance of travel. So anything they call fresh, which is wrapped up or which is in a can or which is whatever it is always at least 5 days old, minimum 5 days old. And it's been through about 3 or 4 temperature changes. If it's anything to do with fruit and vegetables, it's lost all its vitamins. It has no energy by the time you buy it, you know, but it looks nice.
Looks
and this
great.
Is the danger.
Yes.
This is an American idea. It came from America because they all base everything on the visual. They don't base it on the quality of the actual product or the, you know, the taste or the feel of it even. It's what it looks like only. End of story.
Yeah.
So you have polished apples, polished. Oh, that's wonderful. You know? So you think that's the best you can get. And that goes right the way through the food chain in supermarket. It's all superficial. And it's all convenience-based, and it's all just highly destructive on every environmental level possible. You think of the amount of air miles and ship miles which all these projects is covering.
And it's supposed to be saving the planet doing all of this, you know, whereas exactly as you've just mentioned, local food grown locally that you can go and look at and pick up and or have delivered to you, whatever it is, that, you know, and the provenance of that as well, like in honey.
Yes.
From local bees and bringing back meadows in which all the insects are in there and using predatory insects to attack those insects that would attack the crops and things like that.
You don't need a
ton of pesticides.
What you're describing is organic farming and pro-ecological, I call it, because I don't want to be too strictly about organic. You know, it's not everybody that can do 100% organic. You have to be working towards being pro-ecological. And that's what the farmers I'm talking about. I'm not talking about, you'll only find very few organic farmers around, dotted around, but you find quite a lot of farmers in between being rather intense and very organic. It's all that in-between level that we have to.
Yes.
Those are the old traditional farming families, you know, who struggle on and are still caring for their animals and things like that. And it's not factory farming. You know, they're still real people. It's that particularly those sort of people that need our support now.
And
they're going out at the rate of 7,000 or 8,000 every year.
Yes, and that is so tragic, so very tragic.
Yeah.
And those smaller, I mean, one of the things that you were saying, you know, getting rid of animals and all of this, which, again, in the old small mixed farms, you had that circular farming principle that your pigs and sheep and cows and horses were producing muck.
Precisely.
Which went back onto the food, which, you know,
precisely.
So you needed very few artificials coming in to assist because everything was developing it. And this system's been around for centuries.
Time-tested.
And this experiment of the last 70 years has proved, okay, we've done the experiment, but actually let's look at it. It was rubbish, really, wasn't it? It's not been very healthy for us and the environment, so better to throw that away whilst we can. And I absolutely agree.
That's exactly it. One should look at it in that spirit. It was a huge, giant experiment.
Yeah.
Which never should have got onto the scale it got onto.
No, absolutely. Well, it's a very important message, Julian, and I really appreciate that. And I hope people will come up with ideas and think about it and express them, but not only in the comments. It's lovely in the comments. And don't just send me emails about it.
We want people to do it.
Yes, we've got to, you know, and it is possible, and we can spread that word in the pubs, in the cafes, on the in the streets, talk to people. You know, food is the most fundamental thing that we have. And if we don't want to have somebody else...
Having control over it, as opposed to being completely out of control.
Yes.
Having control over it, yeah.
Because effectively what you've described really is it Soylent Green from that horrific film of the 60s with Charlton Heston? Where the old people were being taken away, turned into biscuits, as I remember, and the young people. It's something like that. The last thing we want to be eating is this artificial rubbish, even though they'll say how wonderful and convenient and planet-saving, all that rubbish that goes with it. I think people know in their gut.
They must know in their gut.
They must know.
Their gut is pretty important, actually.
Yeah. It's been wonderful to have you on the show. No doubt we'll talk again, Julian. I'm looking forward to the response. But yes, I will do my best to champion this, particularly in my videos, because it's a particular personal passion of mine anyway.
Excellent.
And I hope people will also pick up the baton and run with it. And we mean run.
Super. Yeah.
Thank you for talking. Well, ladies and gentlemen, there we go. How about that? You've been challenged. We've got to do it. It's the only way.
Yes.
Thank you, Julian, for coming on again. We will talk again. But from us here, thank you for watching. Until the next time, take care. Look after yourself. Source some real food and enjoy it as you will. And we'll talk again. Bye-bye.